views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Najma Weed. This is Ray Street. Najma Weed and Robin Benton. A human rights show that we have every Friday evening, 9 Eastern Standard Time. And we're looking at this whole notion of human rights. What is it? How does it work? You know, how do we get some? Our program centers itself on ISERV International Convention to Eliminate Racism, Xenophobia, and Other Intolerances. And we're looking at the way in which this can be used for the benefit of people of African descent, Africans throughout the world, starting here in Northern America and traveling to other parts of the world as we best can do, given the guests that we have on the show. It is our hope to have the president of the National Conference of Black Lawyers on tonight. I don't know if she's joined us yet. She may be in traffic. But tonight's intention of the show is to review the UN's Working Group on Arbitrary Detention. This working group had a 13-day visit to the United States for the purpose to examine incidents and conditions of arbitrary detention across the country. During the visit, they met with civil society advocates, victims, lawyers, judges, researchers, who in fact were directly impacted by these human rights violations and continue threats to one's person's physical as well as mental to one's dignity. At the center of human rights is this idea that all human beings are born equal and they are equal in their dignity. And any time that dignity is affronted, it causes a consequence. It causes a pain, a suffering, a malady. And as these maladies continue to add up, it creates bitterness, resentment, and violence. And some, too often than not, that violence is in fact visited upon oneself. It's in an oppressive situation, we implode more than we explode. And that's okay. That's in fact what this system is set up to do. To create the reason to implode rather than explode. Rather than putting the blame and therefore the solution where it needs to be in the society itself, we too often, in fact, hurt ourselves. The violence, this is called internalized racism. This is called internalized violence. So we hope to look at, understand these conditions, and more important than understanding the conditions, moving towards a solution. So Scotty, has our guest arrived?
No, sir. Onaje, it is just you and I on the board.
All right. Let me see.
I have a question for you.
Whistle and ride at the same Yes, sir.
I have a question for you about a conversation I've been hearing lately in terms of legal standing of victims of racism, also slavery here in the United States, people who call themselves black and or African American. And so there's this conversation that it's a long running conversation, but I've been tuned into several different conversations of late, people saying that if we refer to ourselves as black, we have no legal standing in the courts, or the UN is not going to recognize us and all of that. So I was reading your description for tonight's program, and of course, you know, I help engineer all of your programs. So you've had on guests who participated in this UN working group, either giving testimony or giving evidence, what you wrote about, where the UN sent a group of people, representatives, to take testimony. So it seems to me that they were recognizing these black people had legal standing under international law. So your thoughts on that, because I'm kind of confused about it.
Well, I'm of the opinion that there's a difference between knowing your rights and standing on your rights, and that if you don't uphold the rights that you have, you don't have any. So as far as, I would have to go back to Malcolm X, who said that, you know, I'm a human being, I'm going to be treated by a human being, I expect to be treated by a human being right here and right now, and will defend my right to be a human being by any means necessary. So when we talk about law, law is just an agreement. It's an agreement of concepts, an agreement of terms, it's an agreement of conditions, it's an agreement of how things are going to happen. I'm present to this saying that says that anytime someone gives deference to an authority that they don't respect, then with every stale compromise, they give up their manhood, they give up their humanity. So I do not believe that people of African descent, in fact, have standing in this country. Why? Because I can go back to the Constitution. You can't add a third party to an agreement when they weren't part of it in the first place. You have to have a new agreement. And we know this to be true. Why?
Brother Anaje, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That wasn't my question about the United States. I said internationally. If we don't have standing internationally, then why did the UN come over here, send these people over here? And I mean, isn't Sister Dawuti part of the UN? Don't she work in some capacity through the UN? But why did they come here and take testimony and evidence and come out with a recommendation that the United States owes reparations if we didn't have any kind of legal standing internationally under human rights?
Well, they came here because they are a signatory to ICERD, and one, and two, they want to give the appearance that they are, that they want, that they believe in human rights, and that they want to show the world that they adhere to it to some extent. So it's just appearance, you know. You can recall when Kanye West said that, you know, to Bush that, you know, Bush doesn't like black people, and the first thing to Bush is, I'm not a racist. So it's a very peculiar thing about people who are something and do things but don't want to, in fact, be truthful about it and just say it. Now, of course, Donald Trump is saying it. He's saying, this is who I am. So, in terms of status, it's, you have to have, remember, and I grew up like in the 60s and the 70s, right? So my frame of reference is what happened during that time. During that time, there were liberation struggles happening all over Africa, all over the world, in fact. And at one time, FLEMO wasn't recognized. At one point, ANC wasn't recognized. At one time, PAG wasn't recognized. These are people who said, I'm not going to be in a colonial status any longer. And whatever I have to do to remove myself from this status, this is what I'm willing to do. So then they not only did they become recognized as the official representatives of their people, they in fact became state power themselves. So we're in the same situation. Just because it doesn't make a difference. We're in the same situation. At some point, we have to coalesce in saying that we are the National Assembly of People of African Descent or African Americans, whatever we decide to call ourselves. So of course, that's a whole discussion in and of itself. But at this point, it's up to us to say we demand to be recognized, not in terms of our individual human rights, but our group rights. Until that's done, it's going to be the same old thing. Until we grow the political maturity to demand a public vote, which is called a plebiscite, until we decide to band together and say we're not going to participate in any election, or at least not on the federal election, until we have a plebiscite, until we make noise about that, we can expect the same thing for the next 100 years. So they did it, you know, they came here because they have this agreement with USERRA that they can come. Special Rapporteur on Racism has been here. Special Rapporteur on Arbitrary Detention has been here. There's been a number of special rapporteurs. The thing I will say is this. Never before have we had any communication with anybody coming from the United Nations where they in fact said that we should have reparations, that this is the first time it ever happened. So we, as small and as little as it is, we are making progress, because all the United Nations is a forum for public opinion. That's all it is. I mean, you can make friends, you can make a lot of enemies, but it's how do we get the world opinion, one, to be informed about our situation in the first instance, and then come to our assistance in the second situation. No people liberated themselves by themselves. They've always had to help from other people. That's what we're the same way. Our situation will not change until we win international partners. That is why when the Panthers was exiled, they went to Algeria. That is why anytime our people had sort of thinking on an international level, they always sought to go and befriend or be befriended by other countries outside the United States. United States. Our situation hasn't changed. In fact, I'm sorry to say it has changed. It's gotten worse. But in the fact that it's gotten worse, people are responding to it differently than they have before. So we need all these people to come, all the different repertoires that can come in and give testimony over and over again. It's up to us to now start collecting the data that shows the blanket, uniform, uninterrupted state of oppression. We're living under domestic colonization. That's what we have to prove to the United Nations. And we have to make this point over and over again. As long as we remain silent, they say silent is consent. It's about us making as much noise about it as possible.
Brother Najee, I'll just like tell the listening audience, until we're joined by our guest speaker, we do want to open up the lines. If you want to chime in on the current topic of conversation, the telephone number is 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Hit star that, and I'll see you on the board, and we'll come to you. A couple of follow-up questions to what you said or a comment. The point you made, yes, I do agree about the plebiscite. I do agree about that, but who will put that in place? I mean, I know it can be done, but I'm just hashing it out in my mind because it costs money to have elections. And so would we utilize the systems, voting machines, or how would we do that? Would it be paper ballots, or do we have to, I mean, because we are paying taxes, so we should be able to utilize those systems for a special election, a plebiscite among ourselves. But so I could see the system saying, no, you can't do that. And so what would then be the solution to that? The other thing you mentioned, not voting on the federal level, I don't see that as being a threat to them. Donald Trump actually thanked the black people who didn't vote, and I actually agree with those millennials, even though it was a lot of people my age that did not. Well, I did vote, but I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. But a lot of people, they didn't realize you voting for more than just, you know, you got local stuff on the ballot, state stuff on the ballot, so you're voting more than just for the president. So, but like here in North Carolina, they're suppressing, you know, the Supreme Court said about suppressing the vote and all that. And Donald Trump thanked, you know, black people who didn't vote, you know, as much as those who did for his election. So I don't see them a federal voting boycott as a threat to the system. I think they would welcome that. But I think, though, economic boycott, which, you know, has been discussed at length among our people, I think that would be more effective than a federal voting boycott. Just some thoughts on what you said. But we are joined by Robin, the co-host. Brother Robin, you are unmuted.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thanks.
Good evening. Brother Najee, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, yes, sir. Brother Robin's on the phone, so I know he wants something to say.
I'm just joining in to listen this evening and, you know, pipe in where I can, but I'm just kind of moved with this whole Trump phenomena and how it's going to impact us short-term and long-term, starting with human rights, the UN, and international law. And, you know, he's already skirting national law, and he's, you know, put in a cabinet of white supremacists. So it's really a wake-up call for us. And like you, Brother Man, was saying about boycotts, we really need a diversity of tactics, and we really need to put it all under the banner of human rights. I really feel that. That's what's calling the U.S. Trump card, excuse the pun, is that it doesn't adhere to international law. So, you know, I keep reiterating that I feel like the United States is an outlaw country. And the fact that white supremacy is illegal, and we're like awestruck by this paradigm we're under, and there's no way to break out unless we go to the international arena, which they're trying to undermine right now. You know, so I have those concerns. The decade, I mean, that's a call for a global stand up for, you know, the majority of the world's population, and we're having a hard time, you know, gathering, and leaders and facilitators such as yourself, Najee, and the group of folks that you're bringing from various sciences, the media, is more important than ever. Well, what Scotty's doing, he's totally always upgrading, always developing. And we need this, but we need it on an international scale. And I'm just curious to know, like, how we can approach human rights from a legal perspective, in that why we focus on the U.S. government. Corporations control the government. Corporations generate the revenue. Corporations engage in discrimination in a structural form. So, and corporations have human rights. And corporations are active in the legal courts and in international courts. Meanwhile, we're just still trying to get an identity that Jesse Jackson didn't give us. And, you know, come together as a nation within a nation with an economic package and a seat at the table at the UN, with all due respect for our history of being, you know, succumbing to white supremacy. I say abandon the whole damn thing and just focus, as these brothers, yourself, Najee, with the reparations and the international law issue. I just think we're in dire times. And sometimes I just get so depressed by the daily, you know, the killings and just the whole issue of racism. I get overwhelmed sometimes, and I just want to grow my food and hang up my no trespassing sign, you know, and go from there. And I just wish that enough of us were doing that, because these Euros are prepping for the oppression that they're escalating. So, and now they have a legal green light with so-called most powerful man on earth, U.S. president, staunch racist, sexual pervert, and the rest. So, yeah, I don't want to waste my time in boycotts and demos no more. I want to do something. So that's kind of where we're at. And that's for my little piece for tonight, Anaj and Brother Scotty.
Well, I hope it's not too. Scott had asked the question, you know, why don't we boycott? You know, I think we need to do both. And for those who are listening to our show, want to encourage you to listen to other shows as well, not just ours. This station has a whole list of very dedicated, educated people who have given their lives to the upliftment of our people. And the show that was on prior to this, they were actually sharing some of the words of the Honorable Messiah Marcus Garvey. And in those words, Garvey was saying, yes, we, you know, have been kidnapped from our motherland, and yes, we have gone through the brutality and some of the worst treatment that people can experience. And also, what about the times we've had and the spaces we've had to do for self, and we're not? So it's at this point, I'm not reacting to what the external world is doing. I'm reacting to what we're not doing as a people. And that is a question of organizing. That's why every host, every co-host on this show is not just a co-host. They are, in fact, organizers. This platform, this airway is for us to organize ourselves. Garvey said, you know, up you mighty people, accomplish what you will. So it's about us organizing ourselves around human rights, and continually demanding them, but not letting ourselves off the hook or exonerating ourselves from the things that we are not doing as a people. We have to come together. Garvey also said that when all else fails, to organize the people, conditions will. So we're about to go into this new era. Didn't think I would have to live through a second McCarthyism. I mean, I was a kid at the time, but just as I grew up, I didn't think it would come, and that is probably a naivety on my part, but it's here. You know, we're living in a stage of McCarthyism. We know about COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, and that's the thing which our people sometimes fail to realize, and I try to remind them that when you have a state-sponsored terrorism against the people, attacking its leadership, attacking its rights to self-determination, attacking its right to self-reliance, and also attacking its right to self-defense, then it continues to do that as long as you will permit that to happen. So at this point, Frederick Douglass says, you know, the limits of tyrants is prescribed by those whom they oppress. It's up to us to come together at this point. Robin, what do you think?
Brother Rob,
you directly on point. I'm sorry I wasn't able to cut in. You know, the challenge about us coming together in commonality is just, it's imperative. It is imperative. And we're so fractured. We got, you know, proxy racists. I don't even know the percentages, but I realize a large percentage of Black Americans, as a result of assimilation, hold proxy racist values and function in a proxy racist fashion, in government and otherwise. And so we've been excluded basically with the major industries and corporations, but we've been the gatekeepers of white supremacy. So yeah, we do need to come together. And I also heard word of an internal revolution of Black folks need to finally call ourselves out. You know, because if we're going by a skin color to say that's my ally, when in fact that person might be someone to turn you out, speaking of COINTELPRO, you know, all of our leaders had a Negro nearby that was reporting to the man, that total boule establishment. So, yeah, a lot of deprogramming is in order. I mean, you know, our education system, our rites of passage should be ours. And rather than, you know, and even with this Republican administration opportunity, if that means that charter schools is the thing and public schools are going out, then these churches, these organizations that call themselves pro, you know, African pro self-determination, we need to step into that game, man, because we're the eighth richest country in the world. We spend all of our money with a man. And so, you know, yeah, we need to come together. And I don't know how that can be done. You know, people will respond to crisis in different ways, but we do need an infrastructure set up, and we do need that to be global during this decade. So, yeah, organizing is very important, and we need to perpetuate this human rights theme, you know. And that's the highest moral, ethical call out on the U.S. is human rights, because they focus on any and everybody else as despots and dictators. But the U.S. is, you know, systemic structural oppression all over the globe under white supremacy. So, yeah, Nigel, you're on point. You're doing the work. A lot of us are doing the work. And we do now have a common banner besides the common cause, and that is this decade. So I really like to encourage people. I don't know if there's any hashtags from the decade that we need to start attaching to all these other issues that are out there floating. But we need to wake up. And we're in a 10-year period for that call out. And in the meantime, we have a white supremacy with a mask off. So what we going to do? We have to organize. And that means coming outside of the U.S. I'm reminded of Ben Chavez when the NAACP had the nerve to finally expand and go into Latin America and be inclusive of the Caribbean. All of a sudden, the whole demographic changed. The majority of people of color joined NAACP's recruitment process, threatened white supremacy, and they went after Ben Chavez, and that got shut down. So we're still dealing with this whole, you know, NAACP, selected civil rights leaders, but we don't have human rights leaders as we need them anyway, and identified as such. And so, yeah, my whole theme is like, white supremacy is illegal. We need to call that, and we need to call it in the arena that has some level of influence in the world community, rather than us just being a pariah, looked down at by our own African brethren, looked down at, disconnected from our native part. The one drop rule, we'll never be white and don't want that. However, we notice Europeans coming to this country enjoying white skin privilege right off the bat. And while they're crying about Latinos coming here to do the labor. You know, so yeah, man, we need to think self-determination, man. I'm not looking for no answers, for no programs coming from Eurocentric perspective. Again, I can't do it. It doesn't make sense. It always ends in our destruction or our oppression, and we participate in that under the guise of this being America and land of the free, home of the brave. So I'm in a kind of a pessimistic mood because the country has declared itself, you know, the white supremacist capital of the world, and they will undue timing are going to perpetuate it and establish it even deeper in the structural, systematic way. We need to come together. We have an umbrella, and we need to come together. And I think that report, the State of Black Asheville, is a prime model. Because when we cry about, well, what's happening in our city, oh, education or health, we need to have a full grasp of the oppression given the facts in demographic statistics, mega data, in all areas of people activity. And it shows a picture of the human rights status, be it police killings, be it expulsions from school, being eco-racism. All these things fall under that same, but we don't see the big picture. We see all these cherry-picked causes, which are all justifiable in that it's oppression, white supremacy. But if we see the big picture from this report, we now have a document that every city should have on its status to argue our human rights argument, to take it to municipal court, to enact ordinances, or to take it to international courts and start suing these corporations and these government entities that are basically illegal. The state's been given, you know, a power apparatus here in North Carolina where they can undo discriminatory legal options or remedies, not even to mention the gay thing and all the coded language, but the voter oppression is major. It's become a system. They have systematically figured out a way to actually impact the right to vote. And they do it, and they've been doing it, and that's probably what got Trump in. I just personally, you know, have a big problem in aiding white supremacy. I don't think they have the answers for us. So in organizing is the apparatus or tool, but we're organizing around a cause of justice, racial justice, but justice. And so, yeah, that's my spiel. I'm just like kind of heartbroken, but we're about to have a break and we'll come back, Anajdi.
Excellent. Thank you.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Hello, this is Anajma Wade on Black Talk Radio. This is Race Treaty. I'm a co-host, and also we have with us met the founder of Race Treaty, co-host Robin. Robin, you're speaking before the break.
Yeah, I'm here, Anaji.
Brother Anaji and Brother Robin, two of the points that Brother Robin just made. I hope y'all don't mind, but Max Parthas, who I believe both of you have met. I know Robin met him at a conference here in North Carolina. But he stopped by the house today. He's on his way to another conference, him and his wife, Tribal Rain. And so he was telling me about this white man who had this conference down there in South Carolina. It's called something about healing after Trump. And you know, it's like a community event at this old place where artists can use it as a public square. So they went down and everything. And so then they were like recruiting people to their organization, had like a little membership card and $40. You know, they was asking for $40. But he said that he confronted the white guy because he said, "We sat up there and listened to you speak, and not once did you speak to any issues affecting black people. You ain't even mentioned some mass incarceration. So we don't know what your agenda is, but you are not an ally, you know, to the black struggle." And so I kind of think that's when I heard Brother Robin talking about he not looking for that Eurocentric, you know, view and what have you. And I think that's something we had to be careful of when we talking about coming together and getting our act together and calling out us, but we also had to call out them so-called liberal allies would-be who really ain't our friends either. What your thoughts, people, on that?
And Najee, I'll respond. I'm going to be seeing Max tomorrow, in fact. And so I will further that conversation then, but I mean, honestly, you have a whole industry that is set up to lend philanthropic and altruistic services to the poor and the needy. I'm talking about nonprofits and non-government organizations, NGOs. They function off of funds and grants from foundations. Now, those grants are only allowed to these organizations based on a coded language that they use to service target groups, at-risk populations, underserved, all these code languages. So they're reorganizing because the white man in this country has controlled the language and controlled the narrative, something called a neologism. They can actually create a word and affix a meaning and through media have us thinking that it's real. First of all, we can start with the word terrorism. Terrorists. They're describing themselves. And they describe him by the FBI a description by law of the KKK. So, you know, we need to really, yes, control our the language, dissect the etymology of these Eurocentric words that have pagan-ass oppressive meanings and double-tongue meanings. We need Sankofa. We do. We need our own strategy. We need our own think tanks coming from all the mind sciences, you know. We need to call each other on proxy racism. I want to say this, that Scotty Reed, I had used that term, but Scotty Reed helped codify the term proxy racist. Uncle Tom don't fit like a turncoat. We actually function in full capacity as a result of assimilation as a proxy racist. We spend our life dedicated to careers, hoping for a pension dedicated to white supremacy. So, yeah, we don't have a breakout economic system. We spend all of our money, 90% consumers, on control no industry, including like BET or hair products. I mean, we don't control no industry. We're 90% consumers. We own less than 3.1% of the land. No wonder that we're considered nobody, you know, but we're an economic force if we came together. It ain't going to happen. We got a proxy racist issue. We got traumatized generations, intergenerational trauma, post-traumatic slave disorder. We got a lot of stuff to work through. And using a framework based on a Eurocentric psychological framework, legal framework, medical, physiological, is wrong. It don't feed us. They've used all these sciences to impose white supremacy on us, from drapomania to Jimmy the Greek saying basketball players, black players have an extra bone in their foot. I mean, the whole thing, it needs to be abandoned. We need to regroup, and we have an umbrella to do that with, and that's that decade. I can't wait to talk to a brother that's talking Portuguese, talk to a sister that's talking Spanish, or all the languages that we've taken on of our slave masters, colonial masters, and we're separated. Brazil has like 10 times as many so-called Africans from Africa, the West Coast there. We don't even communicate. They've got white supremacy set up on a gradient of colorism, light skin versus dark, because whites ain't there. So, you know, closer to white is the ruling, and the embracement of white supremacy is the ruling. And these same so-called leaders in these colorized countries come to the U.S., they niggerize. They still get discriminated against. They still get labeled. So, yeah, man, we got a lot of work to do, and it ain't about focusing on them and fake news. It's about creating our own coverage of our own issues, approach things from a unified field. Don't exclude factors that are real to us. Be inclusive of all of our issues in one, and that's human rights is that umbrella. It's being abandoned by these countries when they were called in Durban on racism. If that definition of racism was codified into law, that makes the United States and Israel immediately criminalized states, you know. And so they walked out, and nobody's heard of it since 9/11. So we're grappling, but we have a 10 years, and it shouldn't be about lamentation, woe is me, and it shouldn't be about celebration. It should be a strategic plan to reclaim our place of self-determination. You know, that's my thing. And, you know, Africa and back to Africa, that's an option. But in actuality, African-Americans are the most diverse genetic entities on Earth in terms of human evolution. We are the most diverse genetic beings on Earth. And we are actually indigenous to this white supremacist system. So to me, that calls for a nationhood. That calls for a self-identity, calls for self-determination. And we can't do that without Sankofa. So I want to reiterate about this decade, man. That's like, to me, it's really serious. And people are organizing in different languages, but we haven't even created a centralized hub portal communications where we can translate and we can communicate and we can centralize our issues and come together. I don't think our organizing is going to be based on a radio show or one individual that's going to end up dead if he talks the truth to power. I think it's going to be technical. I think we do need to leverage this technicality that's been granted us for ourselves. And so, you know, that's what I'm about, man, is self-determination. Because I have never found no answers following a Eurocentric or European antidote to my issues. So we need to really look inwardly. Yes. That's it. And now, I'm just kind of spilling over tonight because I didn't really expect to do anything but listen this evening, frankly. So pipe in, brother.
Well, I'm glad you are. You know, your insights are quite astute. You're a world traveler. Many types of literacies that you have experienced and developed, and I need to hear it. I think our listening audience needs to hear it, so I'm glad that you are spilling over, giving us this information, this insight. And and we, when we look at economics, right, we're looking at a system that always finds ways to reward those who are silent and non-confrontational, be it white or be it black. It has nothing to do with skin color. It has to do with one's consciousness about being human or not. We really are talking about the human consciousness that's connected to respect for the land, for Mother Earth, respect for the environment, respect for the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, those that swim, those that fly, those that sliver. It's really having to do with what one is connected to. And if that's a if it's a short-term vision, we know that that person and that society would only go after what's right in front of it, not seeing this seven generations. So there are people, and of course our brothers in Standing Rock has shown us when the people are united, the people, you know, can be victorious. But they were willing to be, and they're still out there in the cold. So let's not forget, you know, there's different battles going on, and they're still out there. And I mean, I'm sitting in my bedroom, and you know, warm and comfy and stuff. And they're saying like, no, we're standing up. This is the last stand. We're not moving on this one. I would also say that that these systems, these tiers of patriotism, of you know, paying people off, is the thing that holds people in place. This whole system is based upon a lie. You cannot have a country that is based upon a fiat system where every time a dollar is created, so is a debt. How do you then get to pay the debt? You never can pay the debt. It's just impossible. And all fiat civilizations have always crumbled, all of them. And the idea that we think that this one is not is just an illusion. We're living under an illusion. So there are a number of forces underway that's going to bring a serious change to this reality. How soon? We don't know. But what we do know is that you cannot produce money out of thin air and think there's no consequence, because it's not backed by gold, it's not backed by silver, it's just a promissory note. That's all it is. And I'm moving around, I'm meeting different people and hearing different conversations, and it's more, see, there are more people who are organizing than we know. Last month I was in Boston, Massachusetts, and we talked about it last week on the show. The movement, the Human Rights Cities movement, right? These are people on the ground. These are not big shots, you know. These are not, you know, high paid lawyers. These are people on the ground saying, we want an existence where we live that is decent, you know, a certain quality of life. And there's more people who are joining in that conversation than we have yet to kind of bring all together in one place at one time. But I'm saying there is something going on. And certainly the news media, so-called controlled, you know, corporate media, they're not too anxious to show that, because what they found out in the 60s, now you can't show that, because if you show that, it will inspire other people to do things. You know, even they did show a little bit of Baltimore, they did show a little bit of Ferguson, but the media knows that if you put something out there and you project it, it gets multiplied. So the work that Scotty has done in terms of building this network, bringing all these shows on air, is what we have to do. How do we control our own information, our own media? How do we, you know, connect that with many cable shows? You know, I haven't done the research, but there are a bunch of, you know, cities that through different law that people fought for said, if you're going to if you want the right to compete for the ability to, you know, to win a contract, you know, with these municipalities, you have to also provide a free cable training where people are being trained, their studios and their shows. There's countless shows. So if you look at the radio shows we've created, and this is not to leave out how many black stations are being taken off the air. I'm like, you know, that's still happening. But if you look at the number of independent black shows that are coming up, opportunities for cable shows, and if those entities, those communication entities, were linked in some kind of way where there is some kind of uniformity about them, we will be speaking to the people who want to be spoken to and those who are doing the speaking. So there's a rich soil for us to organize. Now it's just for us to take the time to do it. I will say that Robin brought out a very key point. This is the decade, for those who are listening for the first time. We've been talking about this for the last, I don't know, at least year now. This is called the United Nations Decade for People of African Descent. And it's a decade that has three things: recognition, justice, and development. And that's all we need. That covers everything. Recognition of who we are as a people, as a human, you know, our status, you know, in these places where we find ourselves in the minority in terms of numbers, where we find ourselves, how then do we speak out, you know, to the world and join with others of us who are in similar situations, particularly like for South America, for example, where you have many people of African descent who are in the less of the numbers in terms of, and which means power, less in position, less in the resources of sustainability. But now we're starting to talk to each other. So people who, like myself, who went to Durban and spoke to our brothers in Portuguese, who spoke to our people in French, who spoke to our people in English, of course, Dutch, and all the various different languages. That was an experience that we'll never forget, and we have an obligation to continue that dialogue and reaching across borders, because only when we solve this thing internationally will the real solution be had. And there are reasons to say that as long as we continue to struggle, we will win eventually. And the thing is just not to give up. I mean, our people didn't, you know, we didn't get here just by giving up doing slavery. They thought that there would be a time we would have this conversation. They prayed that there would be an opportunity for us to have a conversation. Now, of course, more than conversation, but the fact we're having it, and we're having it because those before us were strong enough to, you know, had a strong enough belief or faith that there would be a better tomorrow, and that's why we're here. We are the manifestation of our ancestors' prayers. So how hard it looks around, I don't get discouraged. I don't get despaired, because if I was enslaved in the conditions back in like the 1800s, 1700s, then that's a reason to be, you know, pessimistic. But even them, they said there's going to be a better day. So this, you know, it's moving forward. Now, King warned us. He said that, you know, progress is not inevitable, progress is not inevitable and change is not guaranteed, right? We still have to organize for that. And as long as we continue to organize, that's really the best we could do. Yes, we are feeling the pain, the suffering, you know, of our people, but there's always been a core that moves on. We are that core, and we're going to keep on moving on. Yeah. So this is Race Treaty, for those of you who are just tuning in. Co-host Onaji Nwede and Robin Benton.
Najee, Scotty, we have a caller. I don't want to give them from Illinois. I want to give them an opportunity to...
Yeah. If the callers want to comment, some people just be listening, you know, so they hit star. We have about 5 minutes left in the program, so if they have a question or comment, anybody, 866-510-9025, hit star. Talking about human rights, talking about the decade. A lot of important information being shared.
Well, Najee, we do have, I honor your work in reparations. It's been a morphing kind of issue, and how it could ever again be introduced. You know, Durban would have made the United States have to be aware in humanity. And the Convention to Eliminate Racial Discrimination, the Race Treaty, speaks of disparate impact. And when you talk about impact, you're talking about a victim and the trauma. You're talking about intergenerational trauma. You're talking about all the studies and science that has brought the reality, even the implicit bias factor psychologically. So you have this internalized oppression, you have this intergenerational trauma. It can't be monetized in the sense that it has a monetary value. However, you know, we have not built our own apparatus for the healing. And Najee, I want you to speak to your motivation behind reparation and how that fits into this decade and how that fits into human rights and how that fits into white supremacy.
Certainly. Reparations is a term that speaks to crime being committed. A criminal, a victim, a harm, an injury, and therefore must be a remedy. And that remedy usually comes in the form of under the word of reparations in international terms. And it has three components, actually four components: compensation, restitution, and rehabilitation. And as a social worker who's been, you know, I've been doing social work for over 25 years now, 30 years, I've come to see that there, every single human activity we can engage in can, in fact, be a contributing factor to the understanding and the development of a struggle for reparations. And I learned that from Queen Mother Moore. Every time a situation came up, she said, well, that's a reparation problem. Queen Audrey Moore was a true example of an African woman who was unrelenting and consistently organizing and creating. She had land that she called Addis Ababa in upstate New York. We need to study and see what she did. Her and her sister, in fact, was Netta Serves, also her sister, whose name I can't think of right now. So reparations is this acquisition of your humanity, realizing that you have been harmed, you've been aggrieved, and you have the right to redress. If we as a people don't feel that and don't hold on to that, we're saying that, you know, just, you know, treat me any way you want, and I'll just, you know, just say thank you, boss, you know. You know, so our struggle for people is really about us recognizing our own humanity. It's not about even other people recognizing us. This is really about us recognizing ourselves. And it speaks to the level of detriment that has happened when we would deny our own selves, you know, in terms of as a human being, as an African. So the healing part, I can say, is improving, it's progressing. How do I know that? I know that because you have the Association of Black Psychologists who have created something which is called emotional healing, emotional liberation circles, emotional emancipation circles. I am attempting to get in touch with the founder, and we've had conversations, and to see, it's actually been going on for, I understand it's been going on for 10 years. But it's popping up more and more places where people are starting to say, and this is a good thing. Why? Because there's an African proverb that said that you can't heal something until you admit the hurt. So our people are now admitting how hurt we are. That's a good thing. Why? Because we have hid the perpetrators' violence and criminality against us because we thought if we were to say how we've been hurt, it will give credibility to what they have said about us of being weak or being this and being that the other. So they've used this mind game to trick us out of our own humanity. It's about us saying what is so. Only reality can really move forth reality. There's no falsehood that can change reality. Only reality, the reality of our victimization, the reality of our pain and our hurt. So these emotional emancipation circles are starting to spring up all over America. And all of us need to know about that, need to get involved with that. In fact, we'll do a show where we'll get those founders on, where they'll be able to give us more instruction and also give information about those training opportunities. Thank you for the question.
Brother Najee, we're signing out, I do believe. Scotty?
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. So we want to remind you to join us again next week for Race Treaty every Friday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Make sure that you tell people about the network, this blacktalkradionetwork.com, where you can find programming by black people for black people talking about black issues. Signing off with our live streaming of the night. Peace and good night.